In association with Newsarama, welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, we begin a two-part conversation with writer Robert Kirkman. Back in the 90s, Kirkman self-published the cult favorite Battle Pope and slowly self-taught himself the ways around the comic book business. We'll talk about his creator-owned success on the teen hero book Invincible, the zombie-based survival series The Walking Dead, and his new image creation, The Astounding Wolfman. Plus, we'll get into Robert's Marvel work, including the upcoming next chapter in the highly popular Marvel Zombies series. This episode of Word Balloon is sponsored by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. You can find all of the Walking Dead volumes and Invincible volumes as well at InStock Trades. Don't forget to visit their sister site as well, Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. I want to start with the press release that I just saw for Marvel Zombies 2.
Marvel Zombies 2, okay.
Which, you know, I know your love for zombies, and we're going to talk about Walking Dead, but I am amazed that this dead horse keeps getting whooped, and there's still excitement about this. And
you know, you say that, but it's Marvel Zombies 2, not Marvel Zombies 6, so...
Yeah, but of all the times that the single issues and the hardcovers and the trades have gone back to press, I mean, this is a crazy gold mine that, am I right, it just stemmed from Miller saying, you know, yeah, that Fantastic Four thing, we ought to do more of that.
Yeah, I know the chair I'm sitting in is made of solid gold, but, you know, I'm not going to say that's for Marvel Zombies. I mean, it might be.
Dude, you're...
I don't know. I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's a unique thing. I mean, you know, it's the first time you've gotten to see your favorite Marvel heroes eating human flesh. I mean, that's a little bizarre. But yeah, it's kind of a bizarre thing. I'm a little shocked by it.
Well, I'm happy for all three of you. I'm happy for Sean. I'm happy for Sudam, and I'm happy for you, man. That's excellent, and people seem to love it. And it's great to see it give Sudam the chance to go back and recreate so many iconic covers and zombify them and stuff, and I think that is part of the fun.
Yeah, you can just tell how much fun he's having on those things.
Absolutely.
They're crazy.
And it's spreading to other publishers, too, because I saw for the Tick anniversary, he did the zombie Tick.
That's true.
So.
That's true.
Tell us about the plans for the sequel.
The sequel is going to be, I don't know, it takes place in the future. It's going to be a very bizarre, I mean, I think it's going to be like in line with the first miniseries as far as bizarre and unexpectedness goes. Basically, we fast forward 40 years into the future after the zombies have pretty much ripped through the cosmos, eating everything in sight, and it kind of starts out with them going, well, crap, that was fun, what do we do now? And they decide to that they're going to go back to Earth and see what's going on there, and see if they can possibly rebuild Reed Richards' machine from the first miniseries and from the Ultimate Fantastic Four thing, and hopefully get to another dimension. So that's the plot. They go back to Earth and try and get to another dimension so they can continue eating. And hilarity ensues. Hilarity and horrificness ensues on the way there. So, and then once they get to Earth, and then the other there's kind of like a two plot thing, and they collide midway through the second issue. We've got Black Panther civilization kind of thriving on Earth. There's a lot of children and grandchildren. It's been 40 years, so there's a bit of a new cast there. But the Wasp is still there, and Black Panther's still there, and Forge is still there, and early on in the first issue, they're going to find Hawkeye's head, and so Hawkeye's going to be a character in the miniseries. And a lot of people would ask me, like, I read the first Marvel Zombies, and I have no idea how you could continue that. And for me, like, I got to the end of Marvel Zombies, and I was like, oh my God, I can do this, 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 and this. This is going to be great. So... I've been really excited about this sequel for a long time, so hopefully people will enjoy it, and if they don't, this will be the last one, so there you go.
Well, and I saw some of the preview art, and yeah, I saw a kid picking up Hawkeye's head. It reminded me of at the end of that Avengers Ultron story,
where there's a poem, and I forget if it's like a Tennyson poem or somebody like that, and it's somebody just kind of, it was a kid studying Ultron's head and kind of throwing it away, but obviously in your case, the kid keeps it.
He keeps the head. Yeah, I wouldn't throw away Hawkeye's head if I found it somewhere. I mean, yeah, I don't know what you would do.
Well, are the zombie rules in terms of, you know, what a zombie can and can't do consistent in Marvel Zombies to what you do in The Walking Dead?
They've never been consistent. So
okay.
There's, I mean, Captain America's brain was definitely damaged in the first miniseries, but uh-huh. He somehow survived. There's all kinds of different, I mean, they retain their memories and everything. So, I mean, it's a very different kind of zombie. And as we go into the second miniseries, we start to learn some more differences and some unique traits that the Marvel Zombies have. I'm not going to give anything away here.
Sure. No, absolutely not.
People got to buy the book, damn it. I can cuss, right? Can I cuss?
Dude, Full Metal. You say anything you want, Robert.
Well, I'm not a potty mouth.
What's that?
I'm not a potty mouth.
Like Bendis.
Calm down there. Yeah, no, I don't want to be like that guy.
No, I understand. No, I want people to buy the book as well, so you reveal as much as you want. That's okay. Honestly, congratulations for taking something as, forgive me, mundane as zombies and really reinvigorating the genre, because I like good zombie movies as well. I always felt I only had room in my life for a couple of them. I love 28 Days Later. I love the Romero movies. I'm always amazed that there's room for more zombie things, but at least, again, I think because you kind of turned the story on its ear and made it more kind of akin to Galactica in terms of it's the end of civilization. What happens next? And that's what I like about Walking Dead.
Tell me more.
No,
please,
no,
don't hold back.
Now it's your turn.
Was that a question?
Well, I know, it's a statement, but I guess, like, yeah, I mean, where,
yeah,
you know.
Walking Dead is great.
But what inspired you to see that there was more than just a finite story here to really do something ongoing with zombies?
Well, I mean, for me, every time I would watch a good zombie movie, and I think there are a little more than you give it credit, even the Return of the Living Dead movies are extremely watchable and entertaining, but, and then there's some sultry movies floating around there that are pretty awesome, and... I'd count Dead Alive. That's a good movie.
Okay.
But anyway, at the end of every zombie movie, it just seems like the majority of them end when the movie's supposed to be done. You know, like, oh well, we've been going for 2 hours. You know,
time to go
home. There was one conflict there, and we got through that one, and now we're gonna ride off into the sunset. And for me, it's like I watch that movie going, well, you know, what the hell? Like, what happens after that? I mean. They didn't stop the zombies for good, and they're still out there. I mean, except for the few where everyone dies, there's always, like, you know, some survivors
mm-hmm.
still trying to get on. And, you know, I don't even think they've really done any kind of zombie movies that actually continue into sequels with the same characters. I was kind of excited because initially Land of the Dead was supposed to do that, so that would have been kind of neat.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with Walking Dead, I just wanted to do a zombie book that started around the point where most zombie movies end and then just kind of keep going from there. And the idea is that, you know, you're going to have a group of characters at the beginning of the series and the majority of them are going to die. And, you know, before they die, you're going to get to see them grow and change and be affected by their surroundings and see their personalities change and their beliefs change and, you know, characters that couldn't really do crap early on in the series are getting to the point now where they're some of the strongest characters in the book. And that was kind of the idea that it would just be like a long-term exploration of like, you know, people trying to survive. So that was just kind of the fun of it for me. And, I mean... the zombies kind of, you know, whatever. I love zombie movies, and that's the basis of it and everything, but the zombies are really kind of, you know, it's just like the window dressing or whatever.
Sure.
I don't really think about that. It's really just all about the characters.
Well, and it's great to see some of them grow stronger and some of them disintegrate by, you know, over the pressure of trying to survive in this no-win situation. It's like Lost and it's like Galactica to a degree. I think you're able to take bigger risks because... you don't have to worry about somebody's contract or somebody, a network telling you, yeah, but everybody loves Rick. So you can't kill Rick.
That's right.
You know, so, but
I'm not selling lunch boxes. I should be.
But
I wish it was.
Yeah, actually, really, man. I'm wondering what I know. The trades just do crazy business. I know the singles, they buy the trades if they haven't jumped on now, and they get so excited they can't wait for the next trade. So you get them to start buying the monthly. So you're the engine that can. Nice going. Interesting that you don't. I guess because of the cast being so flexible and you being able to do what you want, there's really not an end in sight for you for this thing. I know you've said before in other interviews and in the text pages as well, you'd like to see the book 20 years from now that you're still doing The Walking Dead if possible.
Well, I'd like to think that if it started to suck, I would realize it and stop.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't really make that guess. You know, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. It could be sucking right now, and I wouldn't know.
So there isn't a script or something, like in case of emergency, that's in a glass case where it's like...
Well, like the in case Robert dies script?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's a glass case in our living room with a little axe hanging off of it, and the first thing my wife's going to do if I kick the bucket is slash that thing open. But
honey, these are the instructions. Follow them carefully. Call Eric Stevenson.
Yeah, it's a script of just zombies eating everyone. Oh, no. I'm glad he wrote this before he died, because this is a satisfying end. I changed my mind so much in the book, I don't think I could ever do that and make it work. I mean, it's not like I'm you know, flying by the seat of my pants, but there have been a few times where I've been writing an issue and I've been like, this issue needs a little bit more punch. I guess this guy's got to die.
Yeah.
I like doing that because that's how real life works. I mean,
sure.
Sometimes I even have a few plans for the character, and it's like, well, you know, if this were real life, you know, that guy's going to have plans, and his friends are going to have plans for him, and that guy's just going to be gone one day because that's just how it works. And so I like to kind of, sometimes with the deaths, I mean, most of the time it's all planned out, and, you know, I've been working towards it for a while. But I like having a few in there where it's just like, oh, I kind of miss that guy. Like, me as the writer, I'm like, the next issue after Alan died, I was like, I could have totally done this with that guy. And, man, Walking Dead's not the kind of book where I could bring him back. Oh, well. So.
But that's great. I mean, that challenges yourself, I think, and forces you to kind of make different decisions as well. I think it's excellent. The atmosphere of the book is great, too, and obviously the art has a lot to do with that. It's been great. Tony was excellent for that first arc, and obviously Charlie's been doing an amazing job as well. I'm a huge fan of both of theirs. Does it play well in Europe? Have you sent trades over and had them translated yet, or is that still in the process?
It's being published in a lot of places. I know that I hear that it just the first few volumes were just released in France through Delcor.
Okay.
And I don't know. I just got interviewed for a French magazine, and they were like, hey, this book's doing great over here. It's a hit. But I don't live in France, so I don't know what that means. You know, it's like, well, does that mean you're selling 4 copies instead of 2? Or, yeah, I understand that the French comic market is fairly substantial, but, I mean, a lot of times they don't consider American comics to be real comics.
Sure.
So like, is it a hit for an American comic? I don't know. Like, I assume it's doing okay. But I know it's, you know, I've got dozens of different versions of Walking Dead translated that I get sent, and I look at and go, well, I can't read that, so.
but it looks good.
Yeah, I think I got some Serbian copies the other day. There was a really small publisher in Serbia that, you know, like, well, I didn't know they had publishers in Serbia, but I guess logically they would because they have people there, right? I don't know.
Yes, they do.
So, I'm not really a citizen of the world, as they say.
Well, now you are because of Walking Dead, man. When you get the invites to go to some of these overseas conventions, have you gone to any overseas conventions yet?
I've been invited to a few, but I haven't gone to them because my wife just had a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Just had my kid, thankfully. And at least as far as I know.
Exactly. Yeah, but, the way you described it at first, I'm like, okay.
But anyway, as soon as she got pregnant, it was like, hey, do you want to come to Spain? Hey, do you want to come to Greece? And I was like, but I can't. My wife can't. My wife wouldn't let me go without her because she was like, there's no damn way you're going to Spain without me. You know, which is justified. I'd say the same thing to her.
I understand.
And now our kid's kind of young, and I don't know how he would do on a 4-day plane ride. I don't know how long it is over there. So, yeah, but I might be going to Spain later, maybe 2008 or something.
Cool.
I don't know, but I have the taste buds of a 4-year-old boy,
So there better be bologna over there.
Yeah, just what I'm saying. Like, I don't know what... I've seen dishes over there, and I wouldn't eat that stuff. But at the same time, I am trying to lose weight, and so I think maybe I should just go live in Spain for a year, because that would work out.
I don't know. They do good things with, like, you know, barbecued meat and stuff like that. Actually, I think you'd be in trouble, man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
They don't have French fries, right?
Actually, they do. That's like pommes frites, you know that.
Oh, okay.
I was in Amsterdam a couple of years ago and enjoyed a lot of European cuisine while I was there. It was pretty good.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, damn. That's not going to work out for me the way I had hoped.
You know, it's I haven't read George Curry's Image book, but I've been talking to him about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're described as, you know, the child of Image, someone that really grew up reading the books and has of the next generation of writers to join Image. You know, you're the great success story because of Invincible and Walking Dead. And really you know, it seems like everything you've been doing, you know, hit. So how's Wolfman doing? How's the werewolf book going?
Wolfman's doing good. It's selling around Invincible numbers, maybe a little bit higher.
That's fantastic.
So yeah, I mean, so far so good. I got no complaints. So, you know, good stuff. I mean, we sold a little bit more than the director's cut than I thought we would. I was kind of shocked because, you know, it being a reprint and all of a book we gave.
Of a free comic book day book, yeah.
Yeah, that free comic book day book, you know, we gave away like 120,000 of those. So I was like, oh, well, you know, I'll do the director's cut just so people can get it, because I know there's a lot of people that miss the free comic book day thing. But I didn't think we'd sell any, and, you know, we sold a lot. So kind of shocked. Wanted to do a new Image book. I you know, Invincible and Walking Dead are doing really well, and I had a slot carved out in my Marvel contract, and so, you know, the Astounding Wolfman seemed like a good idea, and also Jason Howard, the artist, and I had done this this issue of The Pact. Jim Valentino had this cool idea of getting the four teen characters mm-hmm. from Image Comics and throwing them together in a book, and so he got Shadowhawk and then Invincible and Firebreather, the Phil Hester, Andy Kuhn mm-hmm. thing, and then Zephyr from the book Noble Causes that Jay Ferber does.
Yes.
With, you know, a bunch of awesome artists. So there was a book with that, and I did issue 4 with this guy named Jason Howard, who I think that was one of his first published things. And I really enjoyed working with him, and the book turned out really well, and I liked the pages that he did, and, you know, he worked real well off my script, and so I was kind of itching to work with him again because it was a lot of fun. And I had come up with this idea of the superhero werewolf, and you know, just something to do, like kind of a horror superhero thing, kind of meshing Walking Dead and Invincible together. And I don't think anybody's ever really done a book that focuses on a real, like, superhero dressed, tights wearing kind of werewolf.
Definitely not. I was thinking Werewolf by Night, which I always loved back in the 70s.
Yeah,
that was more of a traditional horror.
Like it's like a traditional werewolf thing taking place in a superhero universe. But,
right.
But yeah, I mean, this guy's got a costume. He's fighting crime. And, I mean, the book's out now, so people can actually see he's running on rooftops. He's fighting supervillains. So I came up with the idea, and I didn't know really what I could do with it or when I could get around to it. And Jason, just out of the blue, contacted me and was like, hey, I did this Science Dog pinup. And I ended up running that in an issue of Invincible, but it was really cool, and he drew Science Dog in a really cool way, and that guy's got fur. And so I was like, oh, well, that guy's got fur, and I'm developing this wolf thing, and I really want to work with Jason, and so, you know, let's see what kind of werewolf he draws. And so I started talking to him about it, and we put it together. And now it's coming out. So, a lot of fun. We got our third issue, should be out by the time this thing goes out. I think it comes out tomorrow as we're recording this.
Very cool.
And I mean, it's just a really fun series. I mean, it's a superhero thing. It's a really fun thing for me to work on. People say fun series, and it's not. It's not a lighthearted series, and it's not you know, it's not a comedy series by any stretch of the definition. It's you know, it's a horror superhero thing. There's a lot of there's a bit of gore, and there's a lot of dark stuff going on. But at the same time, he's out there fighting crime. So,
is there a mystery in terms of his genesis, or
There's a bit of a mystery. Just like, I mean, you know, he finds out fairly quickly that he's a werewolf, and you know, when he became a werewolf. He doesn't actually know how he became a werewolf, mm-hmm. and that kind of comes into play as the series progresses. It'll probably be the second or third story arc before anything like that actually gets revealed, because there are some special circumstances, just, you know, in his werewolfism,
sure.
I guess. And he's got a vampire mentor, which is kind of revealed at the end of the first issue. And that guy's going to be helping him kind of learn the ropes and stuff, and... We'll see more of his origins developed as the series progresses.
That's cool. Is that an ongoing? Is that a?
Oh yeah, that's an ongoing bi-monthly, and yeah, somewhere down the line, if things are looking good and Jason Howard's schedule opens up, we might take it monthly, eventually. But right now, it's just going to be bi-monthly. So, you know, every other month you'll get your dose of the Astounding Wolfman.
And now you've made that leap from image creator to, I guess, for lack of a better word, image editor, where you're kind of, you know, you've taken some of your properties and are turning them over to other writers and other teams to continue them, like Britt and the and the Invincible spinoff as well.
Yeah, Invincible presents Adam Eve.
Adam Eve, yes.
Yeah.
So how do you know these guys that have been. Have come into script, or
I've never met or spoken to either of them.
This is all being done blindly.
Yeah, they just sent in the scripts, and I was like, "Well, I will make those comics. I appreciate that. Thanks." No, Bruce Brown, I've known for 27 years. He's my twin brother.
Cool.
Which is funny, and I'm 28, so it doesn't make a lot of sense. I forget how old I am sometimes, but anyway, no, Bruce Brown used to work under a pen name of Chemo.
Okay.
Which, you know, you can chuckle. I chuckled. He can take it. He's a big boy.
That's from The Pearl. John Steinbeck, Chemo.
I don't know. Whatever.
That's where I've heard of Chemo, is The Pearl.
That's fine. That works.
All right.
I don't know where it came from. I thought it was some kind of Hawaiian candy. But he did some stories in a... Because I used to publish comics.
Yes.
A little company called Funkatron that published Battle Pope, and it also published an anthology called Ink Punk. And Chemo... as he was going by at the time, did a story called Chaser's Moon. I had to remember which story he had done because I'm getting old. But he did a story called Chaser's Moon for that anthology, and we've been keeping in touch since then. He did more Chaser's Moon in the back of Battle Pope for a while. And then he, you know, like everybody in comics, he's done probably dozens of pitches that never got put together, and some of them were really cool. And then he did some Batman stuff at DC. He did some Batman black and white stories, one of which was just collected in the third hardcover.
Okay.
So, I mean, he's been around, and we've been friends for a while. And we were chatting one day, I'm exclusive to Marvel right now, so I can't really do more Brit myself. And I don't know if I'd have time to, even if I wasn't exclusive. And, you know, people, like I say, I think you told me before the interview started that you like the character Britt quite
love
a bit,
Britt.
And I hear that a lot at cons and stuff, and so I figured, you know, what the hell, people have been doing this for years, I'll throw that guy over to Bruce, who's, you know, a really good writer, and just see what he can do with it, because, you know, that'll be a cool Britt series, and I won't have to do any work on it, so that'll be awesome.
Excellent, and still pick up a check, I hope some sort of check because of it as well.
You know, whatever, I mean, yeah. If it were to sell a million copies, I'm not doing it to make money. I don't really. I'm a big nerd, kind of. Like I love comics, and so my payment is getting a copy of Brit in the mail that I didn't have to write. So I'm like, oh sweet, look at this copy of Brit that I could read, and this is great. My character, look at him in a book. You know, like I'm still kind of excited when I get my comics in the mail and stuff. Like, oh look at this, I totally did that. So. You know, as long as I have another book to put in my long box of comics I've done, that's payment enough, whatever.
You know, I'm just impressed with your ability to create not only characters, but really just giant universes for your characters. The Invincible universe being as big as it is.
I had no friends when I was young. Well, to be honest, I have no friends now, so...
That said, Robert,
I'm sorry. I know everybody. Are you kidding me?
Everybody loves you, man. I've seen the throngs of people, like, surrounding your table at conventions and at the panels and stuff like that.
That's an empty love.
No, no.
Those people go away.
Clearly not. Tell me, at this point, what can you say about what you're doing with McFarlane? Is there any motion?
Oh wait, I have to talk about Adam Eve a little bit.
Oh please,
I said that whole thing about Bruce Brown. I didn't say anything about Benito J. Sereno.
Very true, and Benito's a very cool guy. Absolutely.
And I know he'll probably listen to this, and he'll probably call me up and be like, "Man, I don't understand. You totally didn't say anything about me. That is completely upsetting." I don't know anything about that guy. He's really not very good. I just thought I'd throw him a bone and let him do that book. So anyway, what were you saying about Todd McFarlane? No, I'm kidding.
Go ahead.
Benito did this book called Tales from the Bully Pulpit.
Absolutely.
Which stars Teddy Roosevelt fighting, I don't know what the hell it was about. It's like fighting Martians in the future.
But there's another historic.
Was Thomas Edison.
That's right. I was going to say there's another historic character. Yeah, that's a good buddy pick, man. Teddy Roosevelt and Thomas Edison fighting aliens.
It's a fantastic book. It's hilarious. I don't know if it's still in print, but I don't know if you can just order it. Actually, I'm pretty sure it's not in print, but you can probably find it off eBay or.
Sure.
I don't know. It's a good book. And then he just recently did a book called Hectoplasm, which is a really cool kind of like a ghost hunter book that came out, I think, last year. I have no concept of time, so it could be like 3 years old now. But features a cover by Corey Walker, art by young Nate Belgard, who is also doing the Adam Eve miniseries. So the guys that did Hectoplasm are doing this Adam Eve miniseries together. But Benito is a really good writer, and, you know, he's a big Invincible fan. And I met him because he was a big fan of Battle Pope back in the day. And,
cool.
He just happened to come to the University of Kentucky in Lexington to finish his graduate degree, or I don't know what that's called, bachelor something.
Okay.
I don't know, college, whatever. He came to Lexington to do that, and we ended up hanging out a bit and getting to know each other then. And so he's been a friend of mine for a while, and like I say, he's done a few good books, and so I figured he could do one of mine. And Adam Eve is a very important character in Invincible. She's, you know, one of the main supporting members of the cast.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got big plans for her in the future of Invincible. And so having her origin out there, like, I kind of wanted... I could have done it in the book, you know, and just had it be, like, subplots or something.
Sure.
But it'd be kind of weird, and it'd take up a lot of pages, because her origin is a bit complicated, as you'll see in the miniseries. And so I thought it would be, you know, Adam Eve's as good as any to have a spinoff, and figured it'd be a good time to do that. So we got big stuff coming up in the series with her. So that's why Adam Eve exists.
Excellent. And while
I'm rambling. Save me.
No, the point of the show is for you to ramble and people hear you, not me. Let's talk Invincible for a while, because there's another book that.
I totally dodged that Todd McFarlane talk.
No, I'm going to come back to that because
come back to that.
We have to. But I want to know about, you know, Invincible, again, another book that a million attempts have been made to do a new teen superhero and stuff. And I congratulate you because it was, you just, I don't know, you're able to kind of cut through the crap and give us an honest sounding book where the characters seem real. And I think that's what that kind of, you know, speaks to the book's success. I loved not only in the regular series, but when you put him in Marvel Team-Up,
mm-hmm.
and that had to be pretty gratifying to be able to have Spider-Man and Invincible share the stage like that, and have it matter.
Yeah, that was a hell of a thing. I was kind of shocked by that. He worked well with Spider-Man, right? He stood shoulder to shoulder with that guy. That was kind of cool.
No, it was fun.
I still keep that book sitting around my desk just so I can look at the cover of Invincible lying along next to Spider-Man, because, you know, Spider-Man's Spider-Man and all, so that's kind of a big deal. But, never in a million years did I think Marvel would go for that. I kind of suggested it as a joke as we were talking about things we could do in the upcoming issues, and I was like, I don't know, we could have Invincible and Spider-Man team up in an issue, and Tom Brevoort, prince that he is, was like, yeah, I'll look into that. And I thought he was joking. I was like, yeah, you'll look into that. That's great. And then, like, a couple days later, he came back and said, I think we can work that out. So, you know, let's talk about that. And all I had to do was give him my firstborn and name him Peter Parker, and everything worked out.
That's cool.
So.
The twists in Invincible have been great. I mean, you really went from just... you know, him discovering his powers to then finding out about his father. And it's been a very interesting adventure watching this character grow. And again, this universe grow. I guess there's, you know, plenty of more ideas to come. I mean, there's, you know, no stopping Invincible right now.
I've hit a wall, buddy. It's all over.
Oh, okay.
I'm ending that book at 50. Don't tell anybody. But, yeah, no, I can't believe we're at issue 50. Like, I'm sitting there like, what, really, 50? Because it feels like I just started working on the book. And,
sure.
And it doesn't feel like I've written 50 issues. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I haven't written 50 issues yet. But, you know, I'm getting close. I guess that means I'm enjoying it, because I haven't, you know, I'm not sitting here going, oh, my God, finally made it to 50. So I wonder if it'll feel like that when I make it to 100. So I don't know. I need to talk to Eric Larson about that. It's really gratifying and shocking. Like, I remember when Corey Walker and I started the book, we were, you know, we definitely were excited about the book, and I wanted it to go as long as possible. But I never would have guessed that we would have been able to get 50 issues out of it, or be at issue 50 at a point when sales are strong enough to, you know, keep going indefinitely. I mean, and then after the book came out, I mean, you know, the first year was kind of rocky. I mean, I was actually planning on canceling the book at issue 13. I remember Benito Cereno and Nate Bellegarde, who are, you know, doing the Adam Eve thing, were doing backups in Invincible at that time. And they wanted to introduce Hector Plasm in those backups, the one they later did the one-shot for. And I said, well, if you want to do a multi-part backup, you need to start now, because 13 is probably going to be the last issue. And so they did a four- or five-part Hector Plasm thing that ended in issue 13. And luckily, sales started going up with issue 11, so I was like, oh, well, I guess we'll hold on a little longer. And sales, you know, haven't stopped going up. So, I mean, we've had a lag here and there where things have kind of leveled off for a couple months. But right now, our newest issue is our highest selling issue. So, pretty exciting stuff.
Do you think that? It's funny, with just a couple weeks ago, I don't know if you're aware of it. The writer of that Wildstorm book, The Highwaymen, kind of made a statement on his blog about how, you know, I don't think the series is going to make it, and I don't know if they're going to let him finish his arc or not, because sales have been really low. You're the kind of guy that can turn around a good, quick story in 22 pages, but also in the case of things like The Walking Dead and even the ongoing Invincible story, I mean, you know, you're good for the long haul as well. Have you tailored any of your writing for things like Wolfman and things to, you know, maybe, you know, grab an audience quickly, because there's so much competition, there's so much product out there that even, you know, an established name like yourself, you know, you still have to, you know, make enough money off of issue one so that you can do issue two and issue three or whatever.
Yeah, it's really, writing a first issue is probably the hardest thing, you know, to do in comics, I think. I mean, writing-wise, I don't know. Probably not as hard as drawing a entire graphic novel. But, you know, like, you know, writing a first issue, there's all this pressure, and you got to make sure that, you know, because everything kind of rests on that. And I think that, I'll throw a little plug in here. I think Brian K. Vaughan's probably the best at doing that right now, because the first issue of Ex Machina is just a really amazing first issue, and by the end of that you're like, oh, well, I guess I'm totally reading this book now.
You bet.
So I mean, that's kind of, I don't know, I kind of strive for that. But I when I did Wolfman number one, I sat down and you know, it's just, you know, when you're creating the series too, you know, I tried to come up with a name that, you know, people could kind of understand. So the Astounding Wolfman pretty much means, hey, this book is a werewolf superhero. I hope that when people read that title, they kind of get the gist of it. And then, you know, I just kind of sat down and I was like, I got to do something to make people interested. And I don't know if I pulled it off. I mean, I haven't read the issue. I think it looks okay, whatever. But, you know, you got to get them in early and do something to you know, make you have to do something early on in the issue to make them want to finish the issue. And then you have to do something kind of interesting or shocking towards the end to make them want to buy the next issue. And there's all this pressure because you gotta introduce the characters and make them interesting and make it a story that's entertaining to read. I hate writing first issues. Next book I do, starting with issue 2. I'm just going to have Brian K. Vaughan ghostwrite my first issue.
Did you learn, I know you laughed at college and stuff, how far did you go in school and where did
I went to high school and then I dove right into the workforce.
Okay.
I paid attention in high school, so I figured I didn't really need any more.
That a boy.
Any more college, and I don't drink.
Ah.
So I figured, I could probably skip that.
That's fun.
I published comics when I would have been in college. When I was doing the Funkatron stuff, when I was doing Battle Pope, that would have been the time I would have spent in college. And I was just as in debt when I stopped publishing as if I had gone to college. So I think I kind of went to college. I went to lose money publishing comics college. I don't know. Was there a question in there? Are you asking learning?
Yeah, I was going to say how you learned. Where'd you learn how to write? Did you really learn from then your high school teachers and then the trial and error of putting out your own comics?
Yeah, I was the guy in high school when they would be like, okay, well, we want you to write a 2-page short story. I'd write a 20-page short story just because I kind of enjoyed it. And I was like, I'll get a better grade and this will be a lot of fun. And I don't know, I just really liked writing. And I don't know if the stories were good. They probably weren't, but they were long, damn it, and that was impressive. But I read comics as a kid, and I drew a little bit too. But in high school, I kind of stopped drawing and just created characters and made up stories for them. So I was in a sense writing comics all through high school, but not actually producing them.
Mm-hmm.
And so plotting comics. Stuff. It's all. I don't know if I'm doing it right now. So I can't really sit here and say, oh well, I learned here and I know what I'm doing and this is going on and I don't know. I certainly didn't read any books about it or anything.
Okay, because I think you're right in terms of the matter of fact way you described what is needed in a first issue.
Mm-hmm.
And some people maybe innately just through reading comics kind of get it and say, oh, this is what this is. And maybe your brain just works that way. But I was curious to hear if there were any other writing influences or even other mediums beyond comics. I mean, obviously you're a film and TV fan.
Definitely. And I've read a few novels in my day, but not many because they don't have pictures.
Okay.
But, I've studied writing and story structure just from reading different things and watching different forms of entertainment. But as far as any kind of formal schooling, I'm severely lacking in that department, yes. So it's quite embarrassing. I appreciate you bringing it up.
Well, no.
You couldn't tell if I was joking, could you?
That's good. See, I'm sorry I waited this long to talk to you, man.
Well,
it all
just seems like a formula to me. Like, I just sit down and it's like, you number a page from 1 to 2, or 1 to 22,
uh-huh.
And you put interesting things on those pages, and then you type it up in a way that an artist can draw. I mean, it just, I don't know. You write to the page turns so that,
right.
You're not revealing anything on a right-hand page, and try to end with a cliffhanger that's going to get people to come back next issue. I mean, it's all, I don't know, it seems simple to me.
Sure.
So.
No, I understand. That's great, man. It's wonderful to have a brain that works that way and that
I don't mean to belittle the process because it's hard and only very few people can do it and I'm awesome, but I don't know.
How quickly are you able to crank out a script?
It's rare that it takes me a full week to write a script.
Okay.
Usually, I like to try and get them done in 3 or 4 days so that I have time to do lettering placements and letters columns and, looking over art and all the other stuff I have to do.
Sure. So. Now I'm going to bring up McFarlane again.
Okay.
First of all, that was really one of the highlights of the 2006 San Diego Con. You really... being able to just, go up and ask McFarlane in an honest fan's way, dude, we just miss you doing comic books, please. what will it take?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
So, and I'm glad that it looks like something may come of it. Is there any advance? Is there any movement that you can talk about in terms of that project?
I've written script for it, and I believe pages are going to be starting to be drawn here soon. I know we're looking at a like an early, I don't know, like May, June kind of launch in 2008, I think is when we're looking for. So, I mean, things are definitely moving on it. I talk to Todd on a fairly regular basis at this point, so that's pretty good. And then, you know, I don't know, putting the book together.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, we were hoping to have it out a little sooner, but we had some troubles in the art department. We lost a guy and had to get a new guy, so yeah. But and they'll be announcing who's drawing the thing soon enough, I'm sure.
Sure.
Probably early 2008.
But, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people misunderstand though. Like I wasn't saying that, you know, I want Todd to draw a book because I understand why he doesn't. You know, I mean, when I attacked him at the panel and tackled him.
Sure.
I think it's fine that he's never gonna. You know, he'll probably never actually come back to draw a book. I mean, you know, that's a job he did and it is a tough job, and it's not a job he needs to really do anymore. So I understand why he wouldn't do that. But my question was why he oversees the toys the way he does, because I know that he looks over the sculpts and comes up with characters and designs things, and he does a fair bit of drawing for the toy company. Like, a lot of people don't know that, but there's all these internal drawings, Mike McFarlane, just floating around. So he's still working on that stuff, and he's putting a lot of effort into it. And my only thing, like, you know, I was just coming at him trying to say, you know, why don't you take all the effort that you're putting into the toys and do another comic book that you don't necessarily draw, but, you know, you could oversee it, you could, you know, create the characters, you could design the characters, you know, just, you know, why don't you, you know, give it a shot, because you came from comics and, you know, there should be more Todd McFarlane comics out there, even if they're not necessarily drawn by him. And so that was really what I was going after him for. I know that he's not going to be drawing Haunt, but he and I created Haunt together. He's going to be designing all the characters, and he's doing hopefully all the. I'm just going to say he's doing all the covers.
Okay.
So that I can hold him to that later.
There you go.
That has been said, but you know, sometimes you get to cover 12, and it's like, hey, you know, I could step off now.
Sure.
But he's doing all the covers for years and years.
Cool.
And so, you know, I mean, he is going to be participating in the comic at a level that he hasn't really done in a very long time. So that's very exciting. And, you know, hopefully it'll be a cool book, because I, you know, I got cool stuff planned. So
I have no
doubt.
It
should be a lot of fun. It should be a good first issue. I had Brian K. Vaughan ghostwrite it.
And we'll stop there. That's part one of our conversation with Robert Kirkman. We're going to continue. Part two is going to be coming up in just a couple of days, and I think you'll enjoy it. The guy writes a lot of books, so we had to spread this one out. So when we come back, you're going to be hearing about a lot more of the work of Robert Kirkman. This episode of Word Balloon is sponsored by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at up to 35% off, with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. You can find all of the Walking Dead volumes and Invincible volumes as well at InStock Trades. Don't forget to visit their sister site as well, Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com, for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, Word Balloon is all over the internet. You can find us mostly at Newsarama.com, but we're at iTunes as well. Our MySpace page, myspace.com/wordballoon, at ComicSpace at comicspace.com/wordballoon. And of course, if you ever want to email me with any questions or comments on the show, you can reach me at john@wordballoon.com. So thanks for listening. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2007. All rights reserved.